Those of you that said you couldn't hear me, how do you know what I was saying? All right, we'd like to welcome our colleagues in government. They're from the country of Russia, and they are legislators in one of the states there, which is the state of Leningrad. City of Leningrad, state of Leningrad. We call it a city or a state?
Leningrad region,
all around St. Petersburg. Well, we're honored to have you here. I know that the First Lady of Maryland, Judge O'Malley, has been involved in sort of a, what do we call it, legal exchange program back and forth. And I understand you had a reception at Government House, and then I saw you last night, some of you, at the Turkish event. So we hope you've enjoyed your stay here in Annapolis, and we thank you so very, very much for coming.
Governor, I think it's important to point out that Maryland and Leningrad are sister states, and we are always very happy to have our brothers and sisters visiting us. Seeing our kids and look forward to a return visit when the family can get together in Leningrad. Thank you.
I'm only sorry to report that the when the United States and the Olympics plays Russia in hockey, we're going to put a pretty good rubbing on you guys.
Yeah, right.
The beauty of not speaking English, right? Yes. The comptroller is renowned in Annapolis for his diplomatic skills. All right, we have a few items of business. I know, Madam Treasurer, tell us why we're here and what we're going to be doing later on today at what time so we can appropriately take a break in the music in order to do this business.
Yeah. At 11 o'clock, Governor, we are going to issue bonds on behalf of the people of the state of Maryland. There are going to be federally taxable Build America bonds in the amount of $400 million. There will be a competitive sale starting at 11. You'll be able to watch the sale take place very quickly on this screen. We hope to do very, very well. These bonds, as opposed to our normal general obligation bonds, are taxable. They're not tax exempt. So they bring a higher rate to the investors. But the federal government, through the federal stimulus bill, the ARRA, and its Build America bond program component, will be paying 35% of the interest on behalf of the people, so that we only pay 65%, which in fact saves us money. It's the taxpayers' money and helps share it with the national government. We are doing it now because at the moment the BAB bond program is set to expire at the end of this year, and we hear that many, many states and jurisdictions are rushing to the market towards the end of the year to use the program. And we thought, under the guidance of Patty Conrad, the state's director of debt management, that it would be better to act quickly and to move before the market becomes more saturated. And that's why today the total general obligation part is going to be in the form of Build America bonds, and they are longer-term bonds. They are going for the, I think, 9th or 10th through 15th year of the term instead of short-term, because we don't really gain much from this federal program in the very short term. So it's sort of unusual. I trust we will do very well. We do have a number of dealers which have shown an interest in it because, as you all know, the AAA bond rating was reaffirmed by all three bond rating agencies.
Was it really?
It was. You might have read it in the newspaper.
Heard that.
Even told them.
And now, how many states still have a AAA bond rating, Tricia?
7 states have a AAA bond rating from all three agencies. We are one of 7. We are one of the leaders of the 7 because of our strong, diversified economy and our... Well, the timing is excellent. And a very strong financial management system. So that's at 11 o'clock.
So that's at 11 o'clock. And in the meantime, we also have a report that we're going to have on climate change and resilience of climate change. And I can't recall whether that was the treasurer or the comptroller. I think it was the treasurer that had asked the DNR update us on what we're doing on resiliency. Controller, did you have other things you wanted to just talk about?
If I could, just briefly, I know we've got a long agenda, but I wanted to personally thank everyone who participated earlier in a press conference just down the hall to promote financial literacy education in Maryland's public schools. It's an effort to equip the high school students with fundamental principles of financial sustainability. It's about education reform and consumer protection, and it's about long-term economic security for our working families. Also, Governor, since this is our first meeting since the historic winter storms that virtually paralyzed our state, even led to the cancellation, frankly, of our last meeting, I also want to offer my deep personal thanks to our state and local governments for their extraordinary response to these emergencies. I'm specifically referring to the road crews who worked tirelessly in truly threatening elements to keep our highways and interstates navigable for those who had to travel. The county and city crews who went round the clock to do the same thing in our neighborhood streets. And those first responders who went above and beyond the call of duty to save lives and safeguard the well-being of our communities. And finally, those in the private sector, such as the power companies and the hospitals and the shelters, that are responsible for providing essential services and for whom, frankly, failure is not an option. As the governor so aptly said at the time, these are the folks who are the true heroes of the blizzard of 2010. Frankly, anyone who questions the caliber of our state or local governments or disputes the resolve of our public employees should think back to February 2010 and men and women that climbed out of bed and somehow got to report for duty and work round the clock behind the wheel of a salt truck or snowplow or an ambulance while the rest of us were safe at home. Particularly want to thank our Transportation Secretary, Beverly Swain Staley. I know she's not here today, and the Deputy Secretary is, but if you could take my congratulations back to her for the incredible accomplishments and how much I admire what she does within state government. She's very unassuming and works very quietly. Probably most people don't even know her name, but I think she showed exceptional leadership and reassured the public. And frankly, the magnitude of the storm was something that there really isn't a modern precedent for. And so if you could give her my best wishes and congratulations. I'd also like to just mention that two members of my team with their crews made it in here because in order for the state to process the payroll and actually get payments out to state employees during the blizzard, people had to be working here in my office. And I know there are 65,000 state employees that appreciate the fact that they were able to get a paycheck during the emergency storm. And I'd like to congratulate Bob Murphy and his team in Central Payroll and John Salmon and his folks at IC. Are they here? They could put their hands up. They're out there in the hallway. But thank you very much for doing that. I think it removed a source of potential frustration for people that didn't need it at the time. And thank you very much. And Governor, thank you for all your hard work.
If I could just pile on for 4 seconds. First of all, to thank all the great people from the state treasurer's office who walked to work and were here. But also, there was one gentleman who received a lot of guff, and I think absolutely inappropriately, and that's Neil Peterson, who I think did a terrific job as the head of the State Highway Administration. And although I spent from
a Saturday to Friday in my warm home other than out shoveling. That was not because of SHA. They don't do Dalladega Road in but really, I hope you will also tell him that we understand people in their frustration become very frustrated. And he was the subject of some, I think, undeserved criticism. I appreciate his hard work.
Lieutenant Governor Ross?
Thank you, Governor. I echo the remarks, the laudatory remarks from the Comptroller and the Treasurer, particularly as they pertain to leadership in the Department of Transportation, the men and women on the road for countless days and hours. But I do want to take this opportunity. I don't get the opportunity to do this often, not something that the Governor appreciates that I do too often, so I'll take this opportunity to do it. But I really want to publicly thank the governor for his leadership during this difficult time. You know, the leadership that was demonstrated at MDOT, State Highway, and the National Guard is innate, but it is enhanced when leadership at the highest level set the tone for how to respond to situations like this, whether it's natural disaster, whether it's other emergency situations. And as I traveled around, particularly in the Washington, D.C. area during those few days, the number of people, leaders, citizens, who commented about the efforts in Maryland were amazing. I spoke with one gentleman who lives in Central Virginia, and he said, in addition to the sign that says Welcome to Maryland, there was a stark contrast between operations in Virginia and operations in Maryland. The governor spent days traveling to almost every emergency operations center throughout the state, the county, the local emergency operating centers, making sure that the state is coordinating with local governments, that the resources are where they need to be, when they need to be. Governor asked General Atkins to call out the National Guard. We had about 500 to 700 men and women from the National Guard. I want to thank their leadership as well to support local efforts. And as I traveled around, a lot of thank yous from fire stations, police departments because of the good work of the National Guard. So I just want to take this opportunity to thank the governor for your involvement and your leadership during Snowmageddon 2010.
Not to stretch this out too much further, but Lieutenant Governor, thank you. And thanks for all of your hard work during that storm as well. But when the Treasurer was going through her litany of people receiving absolutely unjustified guff, I thought you were looking at the mayor of Annapolis and talking about the Senate president. So, Mayor Cohen, you know, there are very few cities in America that have streets as narrow because of its colonial character as Annapolis does. And, it was an unprecedented snowfall, and certainly, and this is true of all of the local governments, certainly the state didn't help you in the budget this year with the cuts that rolled down to you on the motor vehicle revenues, which we refrained from having to hit for the first 2 years of this, but that we did hit last year and then again this year. So I thought that everybody, including the city of Annapolis, were doing their very best with the historic fall. I'm sure you're as glad as we are to see it now melting. I thought you got unjustified guff, and I thought you handled it with class and dignity and grace, and I compliment you on that. I know it's not easy when somebody bashes your city. Having once been a mayor, I'll always be a mayor, but I thought you all did very well, especially in the face of the challenge you have in the physical nature of Annapolis. Thank you. The Treasurer said if she had gotten out of Bethesda, she would have come to the same conclusion. All right, so here we go here. We have three things we're going to handle up front, and they are some happy events, really. The naming of some buildings in Annapolis after some great Marylanders who have dedicated their life to making our state a better place and strengthening the fabric of community here. So we are going to call the Secretary's agenda, but we are going to go first to Secretary Griffin is the namer on all of these. Mr.
Mr. Secretary, I think that other microphone is actually the
this
one.
This is the one.
Yeah, that's the one that amplifies. The other is the one that records.
Governor, Madam Treasurer,
we're on items 9, 10, and 11.
Lieutenant Governor, good morning. Thank you for taking the time on this busy agenda to consider the item before you that proposes to name, as you mentioned, Governor, three facilities on behalf of three exceptional individuals who have devoted their careers to the natural world and the beauty and inspiration that provides everyone. First, Tom Wisner, who is a personal friend of yours, Governor, as well as many people. Known as the Bard of the Bay, Tom has been raising awareness among children and adults for the past 40 years about the spirit, beauty, and human connection to the Chesapeake Bay through his music.
So we're doing item 10 rather than item 9?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay, item 10, Tom Wisner.
There's a picture of Tom behind you. Governor, as you know, you and Tom share a bond of music and commitment to restoring the bay. And Tom grew up along the banks of the James and Potomac Rivers. After serving in the Korean War and studying science at Cornell University, he began a public outreach program at the university's Chesapeake Biological Lab in Solomons to introduce youth to the science of the bay. Since then, his award-winning folk music has entertained and taught thousands of school children and adults around the Chesapeake, and his music has been recorded by the Smithsonian Institution. Today, therefore, we ask that the board consider naming what is now called Patuxent Hall at King's Landing Park in Culver County, renaming that the Tom Wisner Hall. And King's Landing lies along the Patuxent River, appropriately for Tom, to recognize his life's accomplishments and efforts to educate the public through music and storytelling about the importance and beauty of our natural surroundings. In case you didn't know, DNR purchased this property some years ago and we leased it to Culver County government, and it's a gathering place for the larger community there, a place where the county sends its school children for environmental education, and a place where Tom has taught and performed for years. So, as we know, Tom is not doing well, and he's in hospice as we meet here this morning, but he was thrilled when he learned about the possibility that this would happen here this morning. There's many people here that I would recommend that the board acknowledge who wish to say a few words. His good friend Tom Horton is here, as well as Senator Dyson and Delegate Sue Cullen, and the president of the Culver County Commissioners, Wilson Perrin. Again, Culver County manages and operates this facility. So, Senator, do you want
to?
Senator Dyson.
Good morning. Before I start out, let me thank you all for what you did during the snow, even though you were locked in Bethesda. Our state, I think, did a tremendous job, and SHA deserves a lot of credit. I didn't know that's what you were going to talk about at the beginning of today, but, you know, all politics is local, according to Tip O'Neill. I want to throw out Stuart Dement. He is with SHA in St. Mary's County. I drive back and forth every day, Governor, to this place. I know the hell on those highways. I do. And it was so much better here. And Mr. Comptroller, I agree, and Lieutenant Governor, the Treasurer, about dealing with those other states. You just did not want to do it. God bless us. We really did a great job. And I hope that this message gets back to Neil Peterson and his folks. Tom Wisner. Tom Wisner, you know, he's the music man of the Patuxent River. And probably the Chesapeake Bay, too. But music man of the Patuxent, the Bard of the Bay. Governor, you know he's a pretty cool guy. And when we do the wade-in at Broome's Island every year, there's two things that are really cool. The water, and as we wade out there in the beginning of the summer, the end of the spring, and Tom Wisner. And as you know, he always sings. And he usually brings with him a group of school kids. They have been in the past almost always from Hollywood Elementary, which is in St. Mary's County. But I applaud you today. I urge you to vote and to do this, to do it as soon as possible. I think it's, as the Secretary has said, it's a great thing to happen now before it's too late. And there's no one more deserving. You know, when folks go into that that park there and to that building, they'll say, who is this Tom Wisner? Why is this named after him? And we will be able to tell them why all of these school kids that you talk about, that the Secretary talked about, that go to and use that facility. I've gone there on various occasions for like 4-H and those types of programs, mostly focused on young people. That's what this man is all about. I remember this past summer, Bernie Fowler, myself, we sat down with the charter school. We have one of the first legitimate charter schools in Great Mills, Maryland, and we did it at the Myrtle Point Park. And he sang, and then we went and waited, fought off those damn geese, and the illegal ones, and then we got back together and had a picnic. And I got to believe, and I'll finish with this, those kids were greatly moved. I know I was. I'm certainly not a kid anymore, but, you know, they were greatly moved by it all. And I got to believe they all went home that night and talked to their parents, and they talked about Tom singing, the wait-in that we all did with Bernie. It was the kind of education, not in a real formal sense, but that makes an impact on kids, and sometimes I think they never forget it. So I urge you to vote yes on this today, and I thank you for giving me the time. And I don't know if we have any session left, Senator Edwards, but I'm going to try to see if we do. Thank you.
Thank you. Sue Collins, Made of Water.
Yeah. Thank you for considering this. I love Tom Wisner. I think we share the love of this man, and I think I can think of nothing more fitting in his final days than to give him this honor. I visited him in hospice a couple weeks ago, and I was able to present him with a Lifetime Achievement Award for education of children, and he was very touched. I think he's just at the point in his life that he just appreciates the thank yous for all the work that he's done. I will see him again this weekend, and I will let him know the progress on this, and I hope for a favorable report. I also have his cell phone number. He would love to hear from you, Governor. I'll share that with you. But he's just a great man, and this is just a perfect timing for this, so I just hope that you consider it. Thank you.
Thank you. Sunshine over the deep blue sea.
Governor, members of the board, first of all, I want to say thank you for the support during the storm, Snowmageddon, I guess you call it, Lieutenant Governor. However, and Neil Peterson deserves a lot of credit. State Highway, without State Highway and the secondary roads that we take care of in the county, we would not have gotten anywhere. Also for the communications throughout that blizzard, the conference calls, the making salt available to the locals, all that came together, even loaning us some salt when we didn't have any down there. Also, Mr. Comptroller, thank you for coming down to Calvert County this past Monday to visit Calvert High School.
$3 million.
And I also want to thank Secretary Griffin for recognizing and naming this Patuxent Hall the Tom Wisner Hall. Because this is it's very important to me as president of the Calvert County Board of County Commissioners. This facility is in Huntingtown. It's where I grew up and where I live today. So this has some importance to me personally. Tom is an icon in Calvert County. He's well known. He is he reminds us because of his passion for the bay and our tributaries. He reminds us how important it is and how blessed we are in Maryland to have these natural resources and how important it is to take care of these resources. So the county commissioners support the naming of this facility. This facility is used by kids, it's used by Boy Scouts, it's used by Girl Scouts, it's used by 4-H, as the Senator said, and it's used by the community in terms of recognitions for graduations, weddings, and wedding anniversaries. So it's a well-used place within the county. And you have the support of the county commissioners to rename this facility, and I ask for your support to do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. And the water is his freedom from the need to sell his soul. Tom Horton.
Thank you. You know, the other day I was trying to cheer Tom up a little bit down at the hospice, and I said, if you somehow by a miracle got another year or two, what would you do? And he brightened right up. He said, well, first thing I'd do is finish and expand on that song about the fishes. It starts, who answers the prayers of the fishes, ensures their abundance and more, who guides them to life everlasting as they swim for that far distant shore. And I had asked Tom earlier, I said, Tom, you right sure that fishes pray? Because some people might dispute that. He said, I'm certain of it, and I got proof. And he went on to say that, you know, for the last several decades, even centuries, from Richmond to Conowingo, these fishes of the bay have come all the way back from the oceans to run up their historic rivers to spawn and met millions of cubic yards of concrete in the form of dams. And if that coming back year after year after year, century after century, pressing soft fish flesh against concrete, think a Conowingo dam and a herring, if that isn't a yearning, a supplication, an expression of hope, a prayer, what is? And indeed, that has been one of the more successful little parts of the bay restoration. We've begun to lift them over these dams, blow those dams up, put notches in them. And I think Tom is thrilled at the prospect of this naming of the building. I think he would also say his real legacy, his real hope would be that you guys and all of us continue answering those prayers of the fishes. And if there would happen to be someone on the board who can play a guitar and sing, they might want to pick that song up and finish it someday. Thank you.
Is anyone else on behalf of?
I don't think so. No, Governor.
I didn't see Walter Boynton back there, did I?
I don't think Walter could come today.
Okay, some other distinguished gentlemen. Okay, well, this is item 10. It is before us for Tom Wisner, Bard of the Chesapeake, to name appropriately the Education Center at King's Landing Park as the Tom Wisner Environmental Education Center at King's Landing Park. I would like to exercise the prerogative of making the motion. Seconded by the controller. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? So, Wisner, you accomplished something I never have in life, and that is a unanimous vote. Thank you. We're going on to item number 9. Is that where we're on now?
We go to Mr. Yoder.
Right,
Mr.
Yoder, item number 9.
Members of the board, second up on the list of three is Gary Yoder. Gary recently retired from the Department of Natural Resources after a 30-year career. And suddenly passed away in December of last year. A native of Western Maryland during his long career with the department, Gary served as the first manager of Deep Creek Lake, worked extensively in land acquisition and planning, and was instrumental in many efforts to restore and promote fishing opportunities in the region. Gary, in addition, really served as the department's ambassador to Western Maryland. And he did so because Senator Edwards and Delegate Beitzel and Commissioner Holliday remind me frequently, we own a good percentage of Western Maryland, and so we needed an ambassador to help carry the message from Mountain Maryland back to us to keep us grounded in its importance to the state. And Gary was great at doing that. As a child growing up in Cumberland, Gary witnessed the North Branch of the Potomac recovery that saw its once heavily polluted waters recovered to once again serve as a home to a valuable sport fishery. And I might add that the North Branch of the Potomac now is home to a whole variety of thriving trout, including ones not normally seen in a native sense here in this part of the country, like cutthroat trout, which normally are only native to the western part of the country. Gary was instrumental in promoting that recovered fishery and rebuilding recreational and economic potential of the river and the region. The Kerry Dixon property in Garrett County was the first acquisition by DNR for public boating and fishing access on the north branch of the Potomac River between Westernport and Cumberland. This was one of Gary's projects. We believe it is the most fitting tribute for the board to consider naming this site in his honor, the Gary A. Yoder Fish Management Area. We have a number of people here, board members, on Gary's behalf, starting with his son, Garrett. You'll notice the resemblance, I think. Gary was obviously very proud of his son and his lovely wife, Jen. Gary's brother and sister-in-law, Alan and Betty Lou Yoder, are here, as well as Debbie Yoder Harkins and her husband, Jim Harkins. So we see how the genes are all connected.
She married down.
And, of course, you also know we have Senator Edwards, Delegate Beitzel, and Commissioner Fred Holliday, who wanted to say a few words on Gary's behalf. I think that for the family, young Garrett wanted to say a few things to the board, if that's okay. Oh, no, no, okay. Sorry. Pardon me? Oh, hold on. Okay. Owen, did you want to say?
No, yeah.
Yeah, sure, please. Oh. Is that okay?
Yeah. You've got to get permission.
Yeah.
Watch out for these wires.
They've never stopped off always been talking before.
Well, good morning. I want to thank the governor, the assembly, DNR, anyone who made this possible for Gary. Family's very proud. If my mother was here, she wouldn't believe it. Now, we grew up about 7 miles west of Cumberland, a place called Potomac Park. We overlooked the Celanese plant, and this is where all our dads worked. But right behind the plant were the mountains, but there were the mountains of West Virginia. So if you know your geography, you know the Potomac has to be running through there somewhere. So Gary, at a very young age, started to fish. He took one of my sister's purses that looked like something you could keep fish in, and he went down and fished in the Celanese Dam. Now, the Celanese polluted the river, the paper mill polluted the river, and Gary brought the fish home. Now, if you'd eaten those fish, you would have grown another eye, or you'd have gotten gills or something. So my mother would always have an excuse not to fry. And it would be kind of like frying mushy plastic. I mean, they were just kind of horrible. Now, Gary then went to work for DNR, and we would discuss the rivers, etc. I told him I was going east. So I came down to the Baltimore, Anne Arundel area. He said he was staying west because he wanted to stay in the mountains. One evening, I was at the Morris Mechanic, and I was watching Annie. And in it, Daddy Warbucks says, "What do Democrats eat?" Now, the governor, Governor Schaefer, was there. So I kind of sided up to him, and I said, "Governor, I'm a little upset with you tonight." Now, he doesn't like anyone being upset with him. So I said, "You should have jumped up when Daddy Warbucks asked what Democrats eat and yelled crabs." Oh, he said, "That would have been good." Oh, I said, "By the way, I hear you like to fish." "Yes," I said, "I think my brother takes you fishing when you come up to Deep Creek Lake. He loves coming to the mountains." He said, "Boy, that boy has more degrees." And I didn't say anything. And I said, "Gary, the governor says you have an abundance of degrees. Did you ever straighten him out?" He said, "No, I'm no fool." He told the governor, after the governor caught his first fish, he said, "Governor, you do not realize how many men of DNR we lose down there putting those fish on your hooks." So any of you that know Gary know there was always a story. And that's what I'll miss, his stories, but this one's going to carry it on. One of our last conversations was, we were discussing, he could never understand why I didn't run and go fishing with him all the time. He wouldn't go to an art gallery with me, so, you know, I thought it worked out well. One of our last conversations, the thing that he was extremely proud of, was telling me how clear the Potomac is now, and that the fish have come back, et cetera, et cetera, and he enjoyed it. So he trades, he stayed true to Western Maryland, and of course I abandoned it. And those of us, that grew up in Garrett County, and you're talking about snow, we want to know how you like it. So thank you very much, and we appreciate what you've done.
Thank you. Thank you, Governor. Good morning, Lieutenant Governor, Comptroller, Treasurer. If I might, before I start, you all talked about the snow and the good job and the great job the state did. I thank you for that. But you only got a dusting down here. I know you broke records. We also broke a record. We're now at 238 inches, which is 5 inches above the record. And I've said since I've been in elected office, our people, state, Iowa, county, and local, do the best job in the world, not just in the state, but in the whole world. And I appreciate everything you've done during your snow mega thing here, but we get that quite often up there. I'm here to express my strong support for the naming of this area of the Potomac River for Gary Yoder. I've known Gary for a long time, good buddy, served on quite a few committees with him. A guy that is an outstanding state employee, an excellent person. He could tell stories or jokes all day and never tell the same one twice, and would liven up a party pretty regularly in other ways. Worked very hard for the state, did a great job for the state, but more than that, he was a champion for Mountain Merrill as he worked for the state. He came from that part of the state. He wanted to see it improve. He wanted to do things that would bring people to our part of the state. He was very involved and very active and did a great job at that. He wanted to improve our economic development, use our natural resources, at the same time protecting the environment, and he did that. And we have a lot of people coming to our part of the state to utilize those resources that he worked very hard to do. Matter of fact, I remember when he was working on this particular part of the Potomac, wanted to put in, I thank Secretary Griffin, other DNR, for putting forth this recognition. I think it's very, very well deserved for putting this forth, but he came to me and a couple others. He actually worked to get a lot of boat ramps put in the Potomac River because he liked to fish, and probably I wouldn't surprise him if he's cruising down the river right now trying to catch some fish out of the river. I think they actually did hook some fish on the governor's line for him. But he has a great family. They're very active in the community. I just think this is something that's very, very well deserved, and hope that you'll act favorably on it so we can get recognition that Gary, people will remember it, and they will for many, many, many years in the future utilize and grab hold of the things that he established out in our part of the state. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Governor Bissell?
Thank you, Governor, Controller, Lieutenant Governor, and Madam Treasurer. It is indeed a privilege for me to be here today to help recognize Gary and to thank the DNR for offering him up for this memorial and award. And I've known the family very, very well. Gary way back before he married Jen. And you can see here the apple didn't fall very far from the tree. And one thing about Gary, and I could tell a lot of stories about Gary Yoder, but there's no one that could tell a story like Gary. And we had a business on Deep Creek Lake, a restaurant, a motel, and a bar, and Gary would spend some time there. He kept me there many nights, way late in the morning, telling some of these stories. And really, the other thing that Gary did, too, in addition to working for DNR, is he really contributed to the community. He was talking about snow. He was on the ski patrol at WISP. He loved to ski. And Gary will be sorely missed, and the family, feel for them, and hope that this award and this memorial will help go a long way to recognizing what Gary Yoder has done for our area in the state.
Thank you.
Ted Holliday, Commissioner Holliday.
Good morning, Governor. Lieutenant Governor, Controller, Treasurer, how are you all this morning? I'll try to be brief. Just to update you a little more on the snow that George gave us, the 138, we have a call for 7 to 10 inches tonight, or 238, which will put us over 240. Now, if you do the math, that's 20 feet of snow that our people have kept off the roads. We have about 700 miles of local roads. So they've done a tremendous job, as well as the state. They keep 68 practically bare. We really appreciate that. Back to the main reason we're here, Gary Yoder, a wonderful person. You couldn't want to know anybody more jovial. If it was a sad time, he could make you laugh. He could really bring your spirits up. And I can't think of anybody that would be more deserving. He loved to fish. He loved the fisheries. And to have this honor would be so great for his family to live on with, not having him, but then have something to remember him by besides just their personal family memories. And I would humbly request that you all support this initiative and vote for it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. C.J. Baker's here. Are we doing a family picture once this passes? Don't do it beforehand. You'll jinx it. And Garrett, is it? Do you want to say anything, Tom? No, well, let me say something to you on behalf of the people of our state. You know, there's no more important work in this world that any human being can do than to restore the beauty of God's nature for the beauty of God's people. And that's what your dad did with his whole life. And that's a tremendous gift that he's given to our state. And it's also a tremendous gift that he's given to you, because you've got that same sense of what's important in the world in your heart because of your dad. And all of us love him very much. The treasurer moves approval seconded by the controller. All in favor signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous. We're going to do a quick picture here if everybody wipes their eyes, including the governor. And we're going to look at Mr. Baker.
Okay. Coming close? Okay, very good. Governor, is it okay if everybody came behind you?
It could be, and then I'll all be in the light, but
okay, the flash will overpower it.
Well, overpower. Sure, everybody can come back here.
Yeah,
come
around. That way we can get everybody in.
Everybody take a zip line. And now we're getting really.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, there's a step up. Come on in here.
Okay.
And then the control is watching the.
Very good.
And let's turn towards the center. Turn towards the governor and staff. Coming closely.
Looks good. Looks great.
Okay. We'll take a few pictures.
I'll let you know when. Very nice. Okay, looks great, family. We'll take a few pictures right this way. Very good. Let's take a look. Okay, you look great. Congratulations. Yep. Very good. Smile, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Yoder's one and all. And all the wanting Yoder's. Thank you. I'd love to see you. Garrett, we'll see you tomorrow. Yeah, I just want to shake your hand. Thanks a lot for being here. All right. John, are we? I don't know.
There's one more, but there's no one here to speak.
No one here to speak? Okay, well, let's do that one.
Thank you very much for your time,
like
obviously.
This is the Hall of Fame of
yes.
People engaged in great work.
Yes. Okay. Thank you so much for your...
Thing you wanted to do? You wanted to spend time on this?
Treasurer wants to... But we only have about 90 seconds.
Sure.
So we want to give her, we don't want to rush.
Oh, you want to wait? Yes, fine. Wait. Sure. Yeah. Whatever the board would like.
In the meantime, John, if you've read any poetry, and you're not sure it was a minute and 10 seconds. All right, we are now, you know, did I not read in the newspaper the other day, Madam Treasurer, that in one of the very important votes of late in the United States Senate, that they extended the this bond program?
It has not gone through yet, but it is in the process. Yeah, Yes, Governor. It's in the process of being extended, but perhaps not at the 35% subsidy level. And because of Maryland's outstanding rating and strong fiscal management, we do well for ourselves in the public bond market, and so this federal assistance only becomes truly helpful at a certain level. And so we are trying to keep it at the 35% level, where it will help the people of the state of Maryland instead of a lower level. So yes, it's going through.
I lost my coffee in the other two.
We have copies, by the way, of the bond rating agency letters. Anybody wants to see, they're out there saying the fine things that we say they say, but you can see it for yourself.
This is the ones that say we have a AAA bond rating?
Yes, well, this one does, and this one does, and this one does too.
So all three of them say that?
All three of them say that, and all three of them say it's because a combination of good, strong, well-balanced economy, well-trained workforce. I know everyone here is very interested in the educational level of our workforce, and strong fiscal management and tradition of fiscal management. They mention our strengths, they mention our challenges, which we are well aware of, and their great confidence that the government of the state will continue to exercise prudent management. And so we'll have.
Can we get these posted online? Ms. Foster, can you make sure, Ms. Watson, that we have opportunity for citizens to click on this and see that they hear it from us, but it would be good for people in Maryland to read what the rating agencies say about their state's management in a prominent way.
I would point out also, Patty points out, that they are all stable ratings. There are some states that may maintain a rating but not stable, that is, potentially negative outlook, not negative. They are in the process of getting ready to do this. Is there anything you want to say, Patty?
No, I just wanted to point out that all three of them have made a comment that they are stable ratings.
So the way this works is our bonds are offered at 11 a.m. The various financial institutions put up, in essence, bid on how much they will pay in order to, for our bonds.
That's right. And this particular sale, by the way, kind of comment, Director of Debt Management for the State Treasurer's Office, and you can see we've gotten four bids. This is on Build America bonds. These were authorized by the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act in February of 2009. The TIC, these are taxable bonds, so the TIC is the taxable TIC. To the right is the BAB TIC, and that reflects the rate, the effective rate for the state with a 35% subsidy. From the U.S. Treasury, that's what we would be paying. These maturities are from 2019 through 2025. They're on the long end of the yield curve, so you would expect the rates to be high, and I think that's a great rate, 284. And so we will adjourn, verify their calculations, and we'll be back at 11:20 for bids on a tax-exempt refund.
So what this means is that as we borrow dollars to do important things like school construction and other things, then we will be paying an effective rate of 2.8% on all of that money we borrow to make these investments. That's good. And it would be a lot higher, except that because we have a AAA bond rating, they know we're good for it.
That's right.
And it would be a lot higher, except for the federal government stepped in last February and decided to provide some relief to the municipal markets and open up the taxable market for us. Thank you.
Thank goodness they acted when they did, or we'd all be in the second Great Depression now.
Well, this is a stimulus. This is part of the stimulus program at work.
The cover and reinvestment at work, thanks to your good work, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller and Lieutenant Governor.
They will be back.
They'll be
the
back?
Official conclusion.
Okay. They'll be back for one more song, folks.
Yes.
Don't go away. Yes, Mr. Lieutenant Governor.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Governor. Wonderful. Twice in one day I get to acknowledge the good work of so many. If I may, Governor, you know, we're so proud of the AAA bond rating in Maryland, and we've had it for quite some time. We often mention it, I know the governor and I do, as we go around the state, and so that it's not rote or taken for granted. I just want to take this opportunity to acknowledge the governor, the treasurer, the comptroller, fiscal leaders in the General Assembly, because this is a tremendous achievement. And while we were able to do it year after year, it is not easy. This is difficult. Some of it is due to some naturally occurring characteristics and attributes of Maryland, and I'll leave that up to you to figure out what those are. But much of it is due to sound fiscal management. And when we're able to do that, particularly in these difficult economic times with tremendous pressures on our operating and capital budget, this is extraordinary. It doesn't happen by accident or by chance, as the governor uses it as a important theme. It's because of the choices that you make, Governor, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller. So I just want to take the opportunity. I'm one seat removed, so I can congratulate you without it being self-boasting. Excellent work, and congratulations, and thank you.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Let's go back now to item number 11 on the Secretary's agenda, with John Griffin, a Department of Natural Resources Hall of Fame nominator.
Thank you, board members. The third item we were asking you to consider, honoring the individual with the naming of a facility, is in honor of Julie Schweikert. And the proposal before you is to name the Nature Center at James Island State Park, which is way down in Somerset County.
Which one's Julie?
Right there.
Ranger?
Yes.
Okay.
Julie began her distinguished career with the Maryland Park Service as a park ranger at Smallwood State Park, which is down in Charles County, in 1990. In 1997, Julie assumed new duties as the state park's naturalist so that she could focus her passion on providing interpretive programming for local school children and park visitors. She was selected as the park manager in March of 2007, where she served until her untimely death on January 12th of last year at the age of 43. She was instrumental in the development of many outdoor recreation services at the park, and especially interpretive programming for youth. She touched the lives of thousands of young environmental stewards through her passion for getting kids in touch with their natural world by offering programs for hundreds of school groups. Governor, as you know, this is the kind of impact we're trying to have around the state under your Partnership for Children and Nature initiative. Julie's family, unfortunately, could not be with us today, but they will be attending a ceremony at the conclusion of the Ranger School this Friday at James Island State Park, where the official naming of the facility will take place if the board approves this item. So, we would ask you to consider acting favorably on this proposal, and we thank you for all your time this morning. I know it means a lot to the families of all those involved, and to the department as a whole, and many people in the state.
John, thank you.
Thank you very much.
For appropriately recognizing these individuals. Oftentimes, when the debates happen on budget cuts and layoffs and furloughs, sometimes in the numbers, some of us, some citizens forget that, you know, what a tremendous caliber of human beings we have given heart and soul through their whole careers, their whole lives to the work of the state. We really are fortunate to have such committed and dedicated and good people that could do this work day in and day out, and certainly Ranger Schweikert was one of them. So, Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it.
Thank you so much.
All right. Are there any questions on the balance of the Secretary's agenda?
Governor, I would be remiss if I didn't point out item 14, which is the equipment lease financing. We are continuing with a new way of procuring this, these funds to allow us to continue a program of modernizing state capital, state facilities, with a more open market, and would simply point out that the MBE participation here says zero because there are no certified MBEs in this area, but in fact, the award went to a minority business. It's not zero, it's 100%.
Great. Any other questions on the Secretary's agenda?
Well, I guess we'll have to hold the bond.
Holding that. We have 33 items on the agenda and three reports to the emergency procurement. We'll hold item 15 until the Treasurer's Office returns with that item.
All right. So the Secretary's agenda, Psalms minus, with the exception of item 15. Controller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. And so we only have item 15 to come back to.
And also, I don't know if you want to do the climate change.
Do you want to do the climate change now, or are there people standing there that we might be able to get out of this room for? What do you want to do? Can anybody help me out here, Tom Hickey? Are there sections of this that we can dispose of in a summary way that we don't believe that there's much controversy on? What? DDM. Okay, let's do DDM.
Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Lieutenant Governor Brown, there are 23 items on the Department of Budget and Management's agenda for today. I would like to withdraw items 15 and 16, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions on the Department of Budget Management? Item 15, 16 have been withdrawn. Controller has a question.
Item 17 is a request to go forward with the discontinuation of the food services at the Upper Shore. As you know, the facility is slated to close on February the 28th. So this discontinues the food service for the facility, but it increases the daily food prices at the Whippet Center, which is where some of the patients will be going.
Governor, I'm going to vote against this item because I didn't agree with the original proposal. So if I could get that one pulled out, that would be great.
Okay.
And if you help me with item 19.
Okay. Item 19. Is a modification to extend the contract for 6 months so that a new procurement can be completed for privatization of child support activities in Baltimore City and for transitioning Queen Anne's County back to the state. Brian Wilburn is here. Do you have any questions on behalf of the department? Good morning.
Great. Help me understand why we're extending this for 6 months.
The child support agreement has been in place and is set to expire in March of this year. We need the time to do a new RFP to continue the privatization efforts in Baltimore City. We did a cost-benefit analysis where we had a consultant come in, review this contract, and a determination was made that would be more efficient to continue with the privatization efforts in Baltimore City, but bring the staff in-house in Queen Anne's.
Okay.
And so we need the additional 6 months to do the RFP or put the RFP out and make award for the new agreement.
And I'm sorry to have so many questions in the budget, but the item number five, thank you for that. Item number five, what are appliance rebates pass through $6 million? Let me understand how that works.
Item five is the contract that provides technical assistance to assist the Maryland Energy Administration in accomplishing its energy efficiency goals and to provide estimates of the cost savings that are attributable to the program. And Malcolm is here from the Energy Administration.
Hello, I'm Malcolm Wolf, Director of the Maryland Energy Administration. When we started, the federal government under the federal stimulus program has a appliance rebate program. Maryland's share is $5.9 million. When we started this procurement, we thought we needed somebody who could administer that money for us, who could literally deal with the rebate process and cut the checks. We've now actually worked out agreements with the utilities for all of the five major utilities that we will be able to partner with them with their existing rebate programs. We don't actually think we will need, therefore, to use that task order for this procurement, but it was something that was built in when we did the original RFP. So this would simply be a task order that we wouldn't exercise in this contract. The money would the money will still flow to Maryland residents. It just won't flow through this contract.
No, I understand that. So why are we approving it?
Excuse me?
Why do you need it?
The one thing we will need is the small utilities. The five major utilities, including SMECO, are running their own appliance programs. The smaller municipalities like Easton and Berlin and Choptank are not, so we are going to use this contract to run the appliance rebate program for those localities.
And that's the 3.3?
It'll be a small portion of the 5.9. The 3.3 million is for general energy efficiency for the programs that the state is running. We're actually helping every municipality, giving them a small grant so they can retrofit their own building. The 3.3 goes to provide them free technical assistance and other services. So this is for all the technical assistance for all the state is doing on energy efficiency to implement the governor's Empower Maryland goals.
And that's a 3-year program?
Correct. It's a 3-year contract. The program will be continuing even beyond that.
Okay, and then my final question is, thank you for that, is item six, what are we being asked to do here?
Item six is a request to exercise the first renewal option for the Glass Health Programs to provide behavioral health services at the Shelton Hand Youth Facility. And I think the Deputy Secretary, Francis Mendez, is here to expand on any additional questions you may have.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Controller, Lieutenant Governor. This is a renewal for behavioral health services at Cheltenham. They provide mental health screenings and evaluation to the youth there. It's a renewal of the contract.
So the original contract, this is a renewal, this is taking an option year or what?
Yes, this is an existing provider, and we're renewing the contract, I believe.
They have an option to, they have 2 1-year renewals. They are exercising the first of the two renewals.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the school where we had the problem recently?
Yes.
And is this part of the fix for that problem or what?
Well, as you know, our agency has been informed by the Maryland State Police that we can't comment on the specifics of the investigation, but I can tell you that mental health staff from GLASS are involved in providing crisis counseling to the staff there and providing counseling to the kids. They're a good provider. They've been with us for a while, and we hope to continue using that.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
controversial item 60? All right, so that was item 17, Mr. Comptroller, on the upper shore.
Yes.
Okay, let's pull out item 17 and vote on that. Treasurer moves approval, seconded by yours truly. All in favor, signal by saying aye. All opposed. Controller votes no, consistent with his original decision on this matter. Okay, let's go to the balance now of the Department of Budget Management agenda. Controller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed. The ayes have it. Okay. You see any movement in the room here? You're back.
We are.
I apologize for all of you that are, I mean, this is a big agenda. We got snowed out, so it's a double agenda today. And I know that many of you are here on the Sailing Hall of Fame, and we will get to you.
We have about 1 minute for the bid to come in on a $192.9 million refunding. Refunding is very similar to what we all know and experience when we refinance the mortgages on our homes. We're replacing some higher cost debt with lower cost debt, and we expect to achieve some debt service savings with this. And we've got 1 minute and 45 seconds.
This is carrying on our continuing effort to try to refinance outstanding loan at lower rates. Was it we could do it all and save?
How many sections you have questions about? No, I'm not complaining. I was wondering if there's anything you.
Yeah. We had six bids. The result?
Where's
the Jeffries and Company with a tick of 296 is the winning bidder. Again, we will go back and recalculate and be sure that is correct, and then we'll come back with the motion for both the awards.
They were all close, huh?
They were.
They're all good. Okay, Jerry? University System of Maryland. Come on down. False start. I apologize. Senator Roosevelt wants to be here for this one. Jerry, I was kind of hoping we, you know, given that prerogative and the power, that you call the ones where there's no controversy. Which one? Program open space. Come on down. And we are still going to do climate change.
Good morning. Meredith Lasbury, representing the Department of Natural Resources. We have 7 rural agency items on the program open space agenda this morning, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
They all look great. Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the controller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. Great. Thank you.
Right on.
That's good, Gary. Transportation, perhaps?
Transportation.
Maryland Department of Transportation.
Morning, Governor. We have 29 items on the agenda, but we'll only be presenting 27 since items 5M and 9E are being withdrawn. We are also, for the record, item 10C mod has been previously revised, and item 29E mod has been previously submitted as a supplemental. We are also revising item 3M because it was a typo on the year for the period of performance, and that has been revised.
Okay. Any questions? Controller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. So we move on now to the, how about anything controversial, Elliot? I'll do it.
Yeah, we do. But I think every agenda left has some item.
All right, well, let's go to something absolutely non-controversial, and that is climate change. Let's hear the You ready to do the presentation on climate change? We'll go through the PowerPoints and well, he's very interested in climate change as well. Senator, it's good to see you. Good with directness.
I'm Zoe Johnson with Maryland Department of Natural Resources, Office for a Sustainable Future. Thank you kindly for the invitation to come back today to answer a few more questions and give you a more thorough presentation on climate change and some of our efforts, the efforts of the Maryland Commission on Climate Change, Department of Natural Resources, and some of our sister agencies. We're here to talk about building resilience to climate change. There's two components to building resilience to climate change that most folks are focused on. The first piece is mitigation. Mitigation, a lot of us have heard about in terms of reducing our carbon and greenhouse gas emissions. We have made substantial progress on these fronts, as I'll mention in a minute, in the state of Maryland. What I really want to spend some time talking about today here is adaptation. And adaptation is a big component in terms of reducing our climate change vulnerability. Adaptation is a recognition that the climate is changing and we need to make specific adjustments in our management and our investments to account for some of these changes in terms of reducing our financial vulnerability. Under Governor O'Malley's leadership, Maryland has made significant action on climate change, most predominantly on the mitigation side. This slide highlights a number of these advancements in the last 2 or 3 years, the Healthy Air Act, the Clean Cars Act, Empower Maryland, but most notably the formation of a Climate Change Commission, the passage of the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Act, the Smart Growth and Growing, Smart Green and Growing Legislative Package, and the Maryland Climate Action Plan. The Maryland Climate Action Plan had three components. There was a scientific and a technical component, which was chaired by Dr. Don Bosch at the University of Maryland. There was the comprehensive greenhouse gas and carbon reduction strategy. And then Maryland was one of few states to include an adaptation component in its climate action plan. We developed, the Maryland Commission on Climate Change developed a comprehensive strategy for reducing our climate change vulnerability. The first phase was released along with the climate action plan in 2008. Which was focused on sea level rise and coastal storms. Maryland is taking a sector-based adaptation approach. We have completed the phase one adaptation strategy for our coastal zone, which I'm going to talk to you about some of the recommendations today. We're currently underway with the University of Maryland, also led by Dr. Don Bosch, six new sector-based adaptation working groups, which will be developing new strategies to supplement our climate action plan, and these will be released in 2010. So in addition to our coastal zone, we're currently working on developing adaptation strategies with respect to water resources, bay and aquatic ecosystems, human health, agriculture, forest and terrestrial ecosystems, and issues affect growth and infrastructure. As we've mentioned in the past, and as many of you are aware, the state of Maryland is extremely vulnerable to sea level rise. We have experienced over a foot of rise over the last 100 years. Our rate here in the state of Maryland is double the global average. That is due, in fact, to the occurrence of regional land subsiding. Our land in this region is subsiding at about 1.7 millimeters per year. The global rate of sea level rise is upwards of 3 millimeters per year. So when you add those two factors together, you get the relative sea level rise for the Chesapeake Bay. You have to factor in vertical land movement as well as the thermal expansion of seawaters, which causes the glacial melt to account for sea level rise. So as part of the scientific and technical working group report from the Maryland Climate Change Commission, Dr. Don Bosch put together some of climate change or sea level rise projections, which factor in both those components, the vertical land movement, as well as the thermal expansion and the additional sea level rise, which would come from accelerated melting of our ice sheet. On the low end, and then we looked at two different greenhouse gas carbon reduction strategies. If we are able to control or reduce some of those mitigations on the lower side, we would be looking at about 2.7 feet of rise over the next 100 years. If we're on the higher end of that, we would be upwards of 3.7 feet of sea level rise over the next century. Maryland is, as I mentioned, you know, vulnerable because we have this regional land subsidence. We also have a significant amount of low-lying land on Maryland's eastern shore. And this map here, it demonstrates or can sort of showcase our areas where we're most vulnerable. I want to highlight a couple of issues that we're concerned about with sea level rise. The first is inundation. Now, inundation is going to occur slowly over time and gradually as that sea level rises. The other is sea level rise can affect the height of storm surge, increasing our vulnerability to coastal storm events. So the areas in red would be areas with the blue plus the red would be areas that would be vulnerable to both sea level rise and coastal storm surge over the next 100 years. Areas that experienced flooding from Hurricane Isabel are likely the same areas that we're concerned about in terms of impacts from sea level rise. Maryland is
To that, you have to add just the general instability of weather, because the hurricane also, as I recall, stormed led
what I wanted to demonstrate with these two graphics here is that Maryland is very fortunate that we have the high resolution topographic data that we need to be able to understand and assess our vulnerability. So at the same time, we know our sea level rise projections. We can see from a topographic stance how a sea level rise projection of between 2 and 4 feet would affect our land. We can overlay this high resolution topographic data on top of our digital orthophotography.
So this is Annapolis, right?
This is the city of Annapolis.
Where's
yes.
Mayor Cohen? So he thought the snow was a problem.
The city of Annapolis is significantly vulnerable to.
Naval Academy looks like Venice.
And as you remember, the Naval Academy experienced significant damage during Hurricane Isabel.
A great tourist attraction, midshipmen with gondolas.
I might mention that the DNR is currently funding a sea level rise study and strategy for the city of Annapolis. This is Shady Side Peninsula. You'll see it also is extremely vulnerable. And this is Chrisfield, Maryland. Chrisfield, Maryland it was in one of those areas that was highlighted in blue on the lower shore. It is already experiencing significant problems with coastal flooding and sea level rise. We have the ability to map, and we have done so, these sea level rise projections, and they are all available on something called Maryland Shorelines Online, which is an interactive website. All of our coastal hazard and sea level rise data is slated to be moved over to Maryland IMAP by the end of the year. Yes? And the one thing I wanted to mention, or the additional thing I'd like to mention in terms of this high resolution topographic data, it also allows us to measure more accurately the length of our shoreline here in Maryland. We historically have stated that we have between 3,000 and 4,000 miles of shoreline. When we have this high resolution data allows us to assess that we have over 7,000 miles of shoreline here in Maryland. And we're currently working with the Maryland Geological Survey and the National Atmospheric Association to update our shoreline length. So from here on out, we can report that we have 7,000 miles of shoreline that are vulnerable to sea level rise. The other issues we're concerned about are erosion and land loss. This is James Island. The photo was taken in 1994. You can see that the outline of that island in 1847 is in red. The yellow highlights the area that was of the island, or the extent of the island in 1942. 884 acres have been lost on James Island. This graphic also highlights the fact that we have lost 13 islands out of the Chesapeake Bay. The first slide at the very beginning of the presentation showed Holland Island. There is one last remaining in residence on Highland Island. We have Smith Island, which is our last inhabited island, which is slated to be underwater by 2100. We are taking an integrated approach to plan for climate change. Climate change and these sea level rise issues affect a number of our institutional frameworks throughout the state. It affects transportation planning, affects our shoreline and buffer area management practices, affects our land use planning. We want to make sure we're not putting future growth and development into some of our most vulnerable areas. It affects our building codes and infrastructure design standards, our natural resource management, and obviously our emergency disaster preparedness and response. The Climate Action Plan laid out a vision for how we should address these issues. The first step in this vision is to avoid impact where we can. So this is obviously of interest to the board here today in terms of avoiding impact, thinking about our investments and our decisions about placing new infrastructure and development in some of our most vulnerable areas. And where we are putting those investments in place, where we need to make sure that they're designed adequately to accommodate for the changes that are on the horizon. The second bullet in terms of the vision is to shift to sustainable economies and investments and avoid the assumption of financial risk of development and redevelopment in our highly hazardous coastal areas. This obviously is an interest of the board, and it ties to the first vision statement.
Haven't the insurance companies, aren't some of them refusing to underwrite? How many of them?
Well, in the state of Florida, the insurance industry has pulled out from providing coastal insurance. The Maryland Insurance Administration currently has an insurance advisory committee that's examining these issues. But that's what we want to make sure that we can ensure the availability of insurance in our coastal areas. The third point of our vision is to enhance preparedness and planning to protect human health, safety, and welfare during coastal storm events and other climatic changes. And the last, which is near and dear to the Department of Natural Resources, is to protect and restore our natural shoreline and its resources, because while it will be impacted by climate change, it offers us inherent natural protection. Our coastal and bay islands absorb the impact of coastal storms. Our wetlands, that were highlighted during Hurricane Katrina in Louisiana, obviously facilitate a lot of absorption of coastal storms. And I'm going to highlight a number of the solutions that were recommended in the Climate Action Plan, and then I will highlight what the state agencies are currently efforts that we're currently undertaking to address these. The first solution is to retain and expand our forest wetlands and beaches to protect us from coastal flooding. The strategy that we're currently implementing is to look for opportunities to facilitate landward movement of high priority coastal ecosystems subject to dislocation by sea level rise. We need to ensure that we have room and for our wetlands and other coastal habitats to migrate inland. The second solution that was recommended was to develop protection, retreat, and abandonment policies for our vulnerable coastal infrastructure. There will, at some point in time, be areas in Maryland that we will have to abandon. There have been a number of those islands that I mentioned. James Island was once inhabited. It has been abandoned. There may be areas along our eastern shore that are become no longer inhabitable, either due to the loss of potable water, failing septic systems, or just the loss of access. So an example of a protection where we do continue to develop, there are things that we can do to make ourselves more resilient, such as increasing the pre-board or elevation standards for our construction in areas that we know are vulnerable. The recommendation from the Climate Action Plan was to increase our elevation standards 2 feet above the current 100-year base flood elevations in our tidal floodplain.
So is this something under present law that the local governments would have to adopt?
The state National Flood Insurance Program, which is administered by the Maryland Department of Environment, sets the minimum standard, and then the local governments need to adopt that into their code. But the minimum standard would need to be amended by statute to require that 2 foot additional freeboard. The other recommendation from the Climate Action Plan is to give state and local governments the right tools to plan and adapt. This has been a significant undertaking by the Department of Natural Resources over the last 10 years. I might mention that we published a sea level rise response strategy for the state in 2000 and have been now directing approximately $250,000 of federal funds towards acquiring the data and the information and to provide the technical assistance to our local governments in Maryland to help them plan. We have also launched Maryland Shorelines Online, which houses all of our coastal hazard data, all of that historic shore erosion data, our high-resolution topographic data, our coastal inventories, and our vulnerability assessments. This data, as I mentioned, is all slated for movement over to Maryland Shorelines Online, but it is a recommendation that we need to continue to maintain and update this information to help us plan more progressively. I mentioned, we have also at the Department of Natural Resources been passing through a tremendous amount of these federal funds to our state or to our local governments to help them plan. In late 2008, we released three guidance documents for Dorchester, Somerset, and Worcester County. These guidance documents go through each code and ordinance at the local level and make recommendations for how these sea level rise issues can be addressed at the local level.
Can we get copies of this?
Yes, they're all available online.
Okay, did you get copies of this?
We are currently working to complete similar projects right now with Anne Arundel County, the City of Annapolis, the Town of Queenstown, and Caroline County. This week, we also have just released another round of these coastal communities grants to release the RFP for additional counties to come on board. I wanted to highlight two policy actions at the state level. These are major advancements in our ability to plan for sea level rise. In 2008, we passed the Living Shoreline Protection Act. As sea level rise occurs, we're anticipating that we will experience additional shoreline erosion. We want to make sure that our approach to control this erosion is done in an environmentally sustainable manner, and that the practices that we put in place allow those natural resources and those key habitats the ability to move inland. So we passed the Living Shoreline Protection Act under the leadership of Governor O'Malley in 2008, making it a requirement that living shorelines are the alternative shore protection practice unless proven infeasible. We also passed key amendments to the Critical Area Program in 2008, which increased our vegetative buffer for undeveloped properties for 100 to 200 feet. Keep in mind, the larger the shore erosion, or the vegetative buffer, the more absorption of impact from coastal storms that can be enabled. We also, this is the key, updated the jurisdictional boundaries of our critical area program to account for sea level rise. The jurisdictional boundaries were fixed in time in a 1972 tidal wetland map. Obviously, there's been a lot of changes to our tidal wetland boundaries since 1972 due to sea level rise, and we anticipate additional changes in the future. So those jurisdictional boundaries of that program were updated, and the new amendments call for that update to be done on a 12-year cycle to account for future ranges in sea level rise. It also allows us to consider coastal flooding impacts, which are due to sea level rise, during growth allocation decisions at the local level. Okay, here's what's going on now to implement the recommendations that came out of the Climate Action Plan. The Climate Action Plan had 19 recommendations that addressed adaptation and 42 actions to address mitigation. As you all know, a number of advancements have been made on the mitigation side. On the adaptation side, in 2010, these are the projects that are underway. DNR has developed a lead by example investment policy. This policy addresses both our coastal land conservation programs, and we are working on a project to implement criteria or develop criteria will help guide our investments for land in these vulnerable areas. Now, this criteria, what we want to be able to do is look for opportunities where we can purchase land that benefit our ability to build resilience to climate change. We want to be able to preserve key wetland and habitat migration corridors. We want to look for opportunities where we should be discouraging growth in some of these vulnerable areas. We also want to look for opportunities where we can be building resilience, such as increasing storm surge buffers and removing hazards that may be in the way or that may be degrading water quality in the future, such as septic systems and roads and things that would be underwater in 25 to 50 years. We also have a policy that we are now evaluating sea level rise issues during the siting and design of our DNR infrastructure investments. To go above and beyond the minimum standards. We will be incorporating freeboard standards into the design of our infrastructure at the Department of Natural Resources. We're now currently working on developing the specific criteria for what those elements will be.
What are your estimated timelines?
So the policy is in place. In terms, it tells the Department of Natural Resources that we will be evaluating these issues, both in land acquisition as well as siting and design. And it will probably take between 6 months, a year, or more to develop the specific criteria for how to accomplish that. We also are progressively working on this adaptation toolbox with the conversion of all our data over to, which is called the Coastal Atlas, which will be housed on Maryland IMAP. We're continuing to provide that local government technical assistance that I mentioned. We just released our third round of the RFP for building CoastSmart communities throughout the state. The State Highway Administration is currently undertaking transportation vulnerability assessment of all their coastal infrastructure and its impact sea level rise. Following the release of that vulnerability assessment, MDOT is completing a multimodal plan for how to address these issues within their agency. The Maryland Department of Planning is currently working on an assessment of a historical, archaeological, and cultural resources to assess vulnerability. We have a Climate Change Insurance Advisory Committee, which is led by the Maryland Insurance Administration. And then I mentioned earlier that under the lead of the University of Maryland, along with DNR, we have kicked off development of our Phase 2 adaptation strategy, which is called Beyond Our Coast, to look at issues that would affect water resources, agriculture, growth and development, fisheries, and things that were not covered in the first phase, which focused solely on coastal storms and sea level rise. This concludes my presentation today. Here's a nice picture of Dorchester County. This is a spring tide. These areas around the state in Dorchester, Somerset County, experiencing this type of flooding on a routine basis.
I think the way this question came up, and I thank the treasurer for asking you to come forward, and Zoe, Ms. Johnson, thanks for your hard work. I mean, it's obvious that you and all of your colleagues have been doing a lot of work on this. How many people in your office of the for a Sustainable Future?
What was that?
How many persons are there working in your office for a sustainable future? How many people in this big endeavor that is the 5.5 million person endeavor called the State of Maryland? How many are working on a sustainable future?
We have eight or nine people in DNR's office for a sustainable future. But the role of this group is really to work within the agency and across the state agencies to integrate consideration of these issues. So there's a lot of support within the Department of Natural Resources in our wildlife section, our program open space division, our coastal program, which administers those local government grants and provides that technical
support. And you're the head of this office?
No, unfortunately not. No.
Who is it?
It's Dave Gawthorn.
Okay.
I am a program manager within that. Right. Within
the you're part of the delivery unit confederation, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I think the way this came up was the treasurer was asking John Griffin whether the open space we were purchasing was going to be underwater in 50 years or not. So as this migrates to the IMAP, that will be another criteria. Is that a criteria on our open space purchases?
Mm. That's the new policy.
Well, sure, John.
Well, and it's not just open space. I'm impressed by this second to last slide, by the progress we've made in bringing a number of agencies together, specifically MDOT, which is done intimately.
I just had a conversation in the back of the room with someone from the Port Administration, and they're also considering these issues during the siting and design of their projects as well. So really, these issues are people are becoming more and more aware of them.
And the entire capital program.
Right.
Well, to answer your question, Zoe mentioned that we executed a departmental policy on these issues, including land acquisition. And we're working hard on the criteria that we would then use once finalized to integrate Governor into green print and members of the board, and therefore help us decide more clearly what we ought to purchase versus what we shouldn't, where we can do pathways for sea levels rising, as Zoe mentioned. So it's all under hot pursuit now in the department. It's a lot of work going on, led by Ms. Johnson, who does a great job.
One more question, John.
Sure.
We were talking about adaptation. There's also
right.
a whole mitigation piece. And that, I assume, includes the energy office.
The energy office is on the governor's commission on climate change. Yes, but that mitigation effort is led by the Department of the Environment, with other agencies involved, obviously.
And then you get together and see
what
you can mitigate, what you have to adapt.
Well, we're sort of, yes, there's time horizons on this, and, we bring everybody together periodically just to compare notes and see how we're doing in terms of fitting all this together into something that overall, so everybody's moving in the right direction. Remember her slide on how success on mitigation helps, you know, lower the impact of sea level rise.
You're not going to allow Obama to take Johnson, too, are you?
Whatever's best for her career. Right, Governor?
Sure, John. I regret I have but one cabinet.
Mr. Controller?
Ms. Johnson, the question for you is, how much of the disappearance of the islands in the bay is due to erosion versus rising sea level? Are they the same thing, one and the same?
That's a complicated question. There is some scientific debate whether it's erosion or sea level rise. There is something called the Bruin Rule, which says for every foot of sea level rise, you will see approximately 60 feet of shore erosion. So there is a connection between shoreline erosion and sea level rise. However, this process has been occurring. The Chesapeake Bay was formed by rising sea levels and lowering sea level rise. Lowering sea level. So the process is linked. It's hard to say whether it's all been coastal erosion due to the land subsidence and the coastal storm, or whether it's due to sea level rise. But the fact that sea level rise has been happening over the past 5,000 years within the Chesapeake Bay, and that we've seen one foot of rise over the last 100 years, begs to differ that sea level rise is a contributing factor to that shoreline erosion. We currently lose about 580 acres per year to shoreline erosion throughout the Chesapeake Bay, and that's why we're concerned about the practices that we need to put in place to control that shoreline erosion, because that shore erosion is contributing detrimentally to the health of the Chesapeake Bay. The passage of the Living Shoreline Protection Act, though, is definitely the step in the right direction in terms of using a natural approach to help us resolve that problem.
Is this factored into development decisions in terms of drawing water from the atmosphere? I mean, I assume at some point that has an impact.
Sea level rise? Or just the compaction?
Just the compaction.
We do have a number of studies going on with the Maryland Geological Survey to look at that issue in terms of our aquifers and the compaction of our aquifers and how that could complicate the issue with sea level rise. The Water Resource Committee, under the new phase of our Climate Action Plan, will be looking at that issue in more depth.
That might be then to develop.
Well, if I'm hearing you correctly, issues with respect to water availability are a huge issue with respect to climate change. If you look in the western part of the United States, those are the issues that are on the forefront in terms of those states dealing with climate change. Here, our most pressing issue probably is climate change, and then there's a couple that come after, which are water availability. The agriculture community is extremely concerned about water supply and changes in precipitation patterns due to, because they're concerned about drought.
Infiltration of non-potable.
Well, we're concerned about saline intrusion as well as increasing water tables. Somerset and Dorchester County have a number of failing septic systems, and folks are losing their potable water supply due to this saltwater intrusion and the increasing water table. So we do, we're concerned about that, and there were a number of recommendations that address development in some of these areas to make sure that we were addressing those.
Dynamic system, isn't it? Spaceship Earth. Okay, well, that was
thank you.
Very good and very scary. Thank you. We've got to dial all of this up, though, to a much higher degree in thinking our IMAP. And I was surprised when you looked at the number of different agencies that are working together, and if ever there was something where the Maryland Department of Planning should be taking a much higher profile, I would think it would be this.
They co-chair the adaptation.
So this is both of you together. Zoe gives a better presentation than Rich Hall, so you have her side of that.
Not really.
Madam Treasurer?
Thank you very much. I appreciate this. It's such a huge item. I think you have to keep repeating it.
and bringing it forward in all sorts of different contexts relating to different issues before really can focus. And I appreciate it.
Thank you.
However, if I could change the subject for a moment. Governor, she's got good news for you.
As a result of
no,
I can't guarantee that. Sorry.
Let me just say, part of the outstanding state treasurer's office team.
Thank you. As a result of the BAB sale, compared to a traditional tax-exempt sale, we saved about $7.5 million. And as a result of the refunding bid that we got from Jeffries & Company, who is a national and international firm, I learned, we saved $8.5 million in present value savings on debt service. So our interest payments will be lower in the future by $8.5 million.
And her team for the terrific job they do, really. The last savings, $8.5 million, truly is the savings for the taxpayer. Anything except Guzman, I think. I do have a motion if we could go back to it.
Sure. We're returning that to item number 15.
It's item 16 in the Secretary's agenda. And I would move that the board ratify and approve the preliminary official statement dated February 18, 2010, the summary notice of sale for this 2010 first series bonds published on February 11, 2010 in the bond buyer, and the resolutions the board adopted, ratifying and approving the resolutions the board adopted on January 20, 2010 concerning the bond sale, which we continue to establish the bond sale. Would be my first motion. We could do them all at one second.
Moved and seconded by the controller. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The ayes have it.
Secondly, I would move that the board accept electronic bids for the first series A bonds, first series B bonds as provided in the official notice of the sale. We have accepted them.
Seconded by the controller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. You're
for
on the roll.
For the first series A bonds, those are the Build America bonds, I move that the Citigroup Global Markets Incorporated be declared the successful bidder for the first series A federally taxable Build America bonds in the aggregate principal amount of $400 million with a discount of $1,172,219 and a true interest cost of 2.849472.
Seconded by the controller. Oh. May I have a signal by saying aye?
I would simply point out that it was all said in one breath. For the first series B bonds, I move that Jeffries & Company Incorporated be declared the successful bidder for the first series B tax-exempt refunding bonds in the aggregate principal amount of $192,900,000 with a premium of $30,002,036.74. And a true interest cost of 2.965152%.
Moved by the Treasurer, seconded by the Controller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it.
And I further move that the first Series A bonds and the first Series B bonds be issued in the amount of maturities and its interest rates and prices set forth in the successful bids for the bonds, and that the Board authorize and approve the issuance of the final official statement.
Moved by the Treasurer, seconded by the Controller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Okay. All right. We are going to take a short pause for the cause. When we come back, I think we're going to take the sale museum first. And I'm sure that in the meantime, you all can work that out if there's any disagreements. And if we could hear, if you could limit your comments either to the person that will articulate the settlement or you're going to make us take a vote on this, then if you could try to summarize among yourselves a couple spokespeople for either side of your argument, that would be appreciated. We have a matter with Do It, which I guess is what the voting machines, and we have Ms. Senator Rosenbeth, who's here, as well as Chancellor Kerwin on the University of Maryland, and that item, I think, are the main controversial things. So let's take a short bio break, and we'll be right back. Thank you. Thank
you.
How are you?
How are you?
You too?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.